welcome to another episode of Indie Comic Spotlight, the show where we spend time looking at an ongoing series or graphic novel from a company other than the big two. The hope here is that we can do a deep dive on an indie comic you may have missed or give you a chance to talk about one of your favorites with us on social media afterwards. I'm your host, Tony Farina of DC Comics News and Fantastic Universes. I've been reading comics since I was 12, and while I love a good superhero battle, I gravitate towards indie comics and standalone graphic novels because they give artists a chance to connect with readers in different ways and tell stories they may not have been able to tell with traditional comics or traditional novels. I hope that you enjoyed the show. My guest today on the Indie Comic Spotlight is a surprise, probably, for most people who've listened to the show, and this will be new for me. So the topic this week is Image Comics Paper Girls, which is one of my all-time favorites. It was a 30-issue kind of maxi series written by Brian Vaughn and drawn by Cliff Chang. And it is fantastic. And while I loved it, I'm an adult man who the people who wrote this were also adult men, about 4 12-year-old girls. So I thought, well, I'm going to do the show. It would make a lot of sense to actually talk to someone who is of the age or close to the age of the characters so we can kind of get battling perspectives. So my guest today is 13-year-old, all the way from Colorado, Jack Dawson. Jack, thank you for coming to the show, sir.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be here.
Thanks, man. So before we get into Paper Girls itself, I always, since you're new to the show, the first thing I always ask anybody is to tell people kind of your comic book origin story. Now, you're only 13, so obviously you've not been reading comics, I'd assume, for more than 10 years, because the earliest you've been reading is 3, if I remember that, right? So, when did you start reading comics? Why did you start reading comics? What kind of comics do you read? And when did you read this title, please?
I do believe I started with Calvin and Hobbes. We had a whole bunch of old newspapers, and I was just looking through them, and there was a strip of Calvin and Hobbes, and I was like, man, this is really cool, because I was like, you know, there is this whole imaginary world, and I wasn't thinking all of that. I mean, I was 4 or 5, but I just thought it was so cool that, you know, they had all of these adventures. They went to the moon, and Calvin was always kind of bad in school, but, you know, it was a fun adventure.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I actually,
first one.
Yeah, I actually have the full volumes of them, like the full set with 3 very heavy books.
Nice. Yeah, the Essential, the Ultimate.
Yeah.
Sunday, the ones with mm-hmm. the in color. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big Calvin and Hobbes fan. So that's a great place to start. Because he drew his own comics too. Space mm-hmm. Myth was his version of himself. Right. Nice. So that was when you started. So when did you then move from comic strips into comic books? Do you remember?
We had a whole stack of Indiana Jones, like the really old, where it had the little Spider-Man logo and everything. But I thought those were cool because, you know, they were the originals.
Yeah. That's awesome. And now your Aunt Peg gives you, mm-hmm. I've seen.
Yeah.
Now, how does she decide? Does she just like, here's a bunch of comics and she gives them to you and your sister? Or do you ask her for something in particular?
I kind of ask her, like, hey, can you do Marvel? Or, hey, can you do a little bit of DC? Like, I mean, just kind of stuff in between. But usually she's like, ooh, I think Jack would like that. Ooh, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm.
Cool. And so when did you, now I know this will, based on some of the conversation I've had with you and your mother, mm-hmm. I know that you've actually read probably like maybe above your weight a little bit, above your weight class. I know you've actually read Watchmen. Which, you know, I read a lot of comics when I was mm-hmm. 12 and 13 too, that are probably, you know, when you'll read them again later and be like, oh, that's a totally different.
Hey, yeah.
I think this will be fun to do. But when did you read, do you remember when you read Paper Girls? I know you reread the whole thing for this, but when did you stumble across them? Was it just digitally or did the stack gave you?
I think we went to Denver or someplace like that, and we found like this little bookshop, and it was a just little like three, I don't know, like the three volumes of it, three first ones.
The first,
and I was like, ooh, this is kind of cool. And then I was kind of flipping through and I was like, huh. And then, you know, Adele was like, oh, those are super cool. And so we bought some and then we kind of lost them in the move. But I mean, now that we've got these ones, I mean,
nice. Like,
they're pretty dang amazing.
They are. Yeah, the real thick paper. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a fun book. And I think the attraction, you know, they're kids and they swear and Mackenzie smokes and we'll talk about all of that. But, you know, it's one of those weird things about Paper Girls is that it's about children, but it's not necessarily for children. But I think it's accessible. The cool thing about comic books is you're not getting carded, right? If they made a if they made a Paper Girls movie and they made it accurate to the thing, you couldn't get in to see it in the theater.
Yeah.
Right, because it would be
rated R.
Right, because it's bloody and they swear a lot and 12-year-olds smoking probably going to get an R rating, because it's in a comic book form, it's way more accessible, and I think it's a smart move on the behalf of everybody to say, well, let's make a book about kids that kids would be interested in. I mean, you know, like 6-year-old probably shouldn't read this, but somebody who's 10, 11, I mean, 12 and up. I mean, I'm, you know, this came out while I was in my 40s, which I and I loved it. Of course, I love it for different reasons because I'm about the age of them. Like the girls and I are, would, like in this day and age, they would be 46, 47, which I am. Like, I'm fascinated with the story because of when it takes place and how I can relate to them as opposed to you being their age now. So that's why I thought it would be a fun talk.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I know that's the cool thing too for you is that, you know, no matter where you go, you have people reading comics.
Yeah.
No one's ever said. So what's it like for you? So when I was a kid, comics weren't cool necessarily. It was not a thing until the Batman 89 movie came out, the Michael Keaton movie, when it was suddenly cool. And when your mother first knew me when we were in middle school, I was always wearing Batman stuff and always loved Batman. And it wasn't cool then. It wasn't because that was pre-89. And then it became cool again. So you're growing up kind of in an era where reading comics and liking comic book media is fine. And no one looks down on it. Well, that's what I think. I'm not 13. So what's it like for you? How many of your friends read comics, or are you kind of like the weird kid who reads comics?
I would say most kids at my school are not like totally into comics, but you even have a Batman mug.
I do. Yes, I'm drinking from my Batman mug. That's correct. Yes, I do. Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that all the kids read comics, but there are a whole bunch of kids that are like, oh, did you hear about blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, oh yeah, I read that one. And like, just, it's kind of a community where if you know where to get in, you can get in. Like, Paper Girls is like this certain, like how I found out, like you would just have to kind of stumble upon it and, you know, explore it.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas probably most kids are reading like superhero stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair. And like maybe even the Turtles, do people still read Turtles or they just watch the show? Like do people still read the Turtle, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic, or is that not? Is that just adults that read that?
I would be willing to read some.
Yeah.
But I don't think I know where any are. But
that's totally fair. That's totally fair. Well, they've changed publishers a bunch of times. It's fine. I think about that. So that's cool. Well, I'm glad. The thing is, and the school where you go is an art magnate school too, right?
Yeah.
So, like creative arts are where everybody there does performances and does some sort of art. So it would be it's welcome there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most kids at my school are super talented artists and amazing drawers. And there's this kid, Layden, who actually draws comics, and he's amazing at it. He mostly draws anime, but I've seen him draw some cartoon characters and stuff like that. But he's really great at that stuff, but I'm sure he reads manga and all that stuff. But like, I don't know.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, super cool. I mean, you know, the manga, I'm not a huge manga fan. I mean, everybody likes it. They like, I've read my fair share. The show on Sailor Moon on here, because I had never read Sailor Moon. I'd only kind of knew of her peripherally. So it was cool to read Sailor Moon and actually get into it. It was way better than I thought it was going to be. I think with manga, because it comes across as really, like you said, it's almost a little cartoony. Matter isn't the look of it is, it's way, it's constantly moving. So I think it's just a different, there's a lot of motion in this book too. Of course, it's a time travel.
Yeah.
They fight and do things, they're on their bikes. But it's a different kind of art as opposed to like or manga where it's like everything is big and it's
stop.
Yeah, I get that. We're in this, and later we'll talk about Cliff Chang's art. It's a lot more subtle, whereas with manga, it's like right on their face. So
yeah,
that's cool. That's cool though, that's something that, again, like I think about me being in, you know, eighth and ninth grade, that would not have been the kid drawn manga. I would have been, his only friend would have been me, you know? So that's cool that has changed and that you get to go to a school where that that's encouraged. So one last question before we get into this, you live in Colorado and you from Denver. Have you ever been to Mile High Comics, which is, you know, one of the biggest comic stores in the country?
I think we might have passed it.
That's fair.
Yeah, but I would think that if we went, I would probably know what.
Yeah, you probably would. Yeah, it's just one of those things. There's like a handful of places, comic shops in the country where. Where people are like, they know. It's almost like people go not to buy anything just to say they went to Mile High Comics. So I just was curious if you...
I think I actually went with you.
We didn't end up getting there. When we were in Denver that time to see Brett Dennen.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Because that was okay, though. But we went and saw Brett Dennen. So that was...
Yeah, that's right. That was all good.
Yeah, everything was fine. That was a good day. So, cool. Well, let's talk about Paper Girls. So... there's four main characters, and we definitely need to do a character breakdown before we'll explain briefly the plot. We'll talk about the characters. So the premise of Paper Girls essentially is that there's these four girls who deliver papers in Cleveland, and they miraculously get sucked through time.
Yeah.
And that happens really early on. Like, this isn't a lot. It's like right away they get sucked into time vortexes, and then that's it. And that's the story of them meeting older versions of themselves.
And yeah, all essentially,
all the different versions of them. So what do you think about, before we get into the characters, when you first started reading it, because you don't know what it's about at first, the initial cover is just the four of them on their bikes smoking. And you don't really know what it is. And then like pretty early on, it's time travel. So when you saw that time travel was happening, obviously you wanted to keep reading. What do you think of time travel as a plot device? Did it work for you? Did you find it like, wait a minute, I forgot what happened in issue two? You know, how did that go for you?
It was a little confusing. I mean, occasionally I was like, wait, what happened? And then, you know, like if you missed like one little detail, it could be like, wait, how did that happen? Like, wait, how did they get to Stone Age stream and like
right yeah
but yeah and I think one of the things that was really cool when I realized that they were time traveling, like, just the visuals of it were just amazing throughout the entire thing. I mean, it just looks so good.
Yeah, it does, it really does. And what I like about it, the reason I asked, is I think there's different types of time travel stories. There's time stories. Like, my favorite time travel stories, and one of the other people who has a show on this network that this will air, the Comics Network, Chris, his favorite movie series is Back to the Future. And the thing that I love about Back to the Future, and while I am with him, I think it's the best time travel story because they don't bother too much to try to explain the time travel, like, intricate detail. It's like flux capacitor, time travel.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, time travel. And I think with Paper Girls, they while there's rules of time travel, they don't explain really necessarily how the time travel works. And did you was that okay with you, or were you constantly worried, like, well, how does the time travel machine work? Or did you not care? Were you just along for the ride?
I was just like, dang, that looks like the inside of your intestine. That's kind of gross, but that's a time travel machine.
It is now, right?
Yeah. But like the first time they went into that basement and took off the parachute thing, it was just like, there's this entire other section you didn't even know about that could even happen. And yeah, and that's what really drew me in, along with the art. Like, it was just like, okay, sky's gone really weird. Sounds like there's a huge thunderstorm. Okay, now we're pulling off this weird leather coating, and now we have a time machine. Like, it's just, it's a wonderful story to go through.
It is. What I love about it is, like you said, it's just, it's there. They don't, Vaughn and Chang don't bother. They don't bother. It's like you said, this is just how time travel works, and it's, and they make it appealing enough, and that there's nothing about it where you think about four 12-year-old girls in 1988. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, like I said earlier, they're a little bit younger than me, but you know, it's like,
yeah,
they're in there now, they'd be in their 40s. But the idea that that you could do that in 1988, mm-hmm. like no one is, they don't have phones, there's no connection, they're just out on their bikes, and they're like, oh yeah, let's just go into this basement. We heard a crash, let's investigate. Not like,
yeah,
let's get the hell away from here. So it's pretty fascinating way to do it. So before we get too much into the plot, let's talk about the characters. So the four main characters are Mac, Mackenzie Coyle, who is chain smoker, badass, kind of leader of the group. There's
Kay, yeah.
who is plays field hockey. She's the ginger. She, I don't know. She's timid, we'll say it.
Yeah.
Even though she's probably the biggest and strongest of them because she plays field hockey. Mm-hmm. There's Tiffany, who's probably the smartest,
I would say. Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah.
And then there's, or do you think Erin? And Erin, who's the new girl, is there. So what do you think?
Who's, I think Erin's kind of got everything figured out, but she's just a little bit clueless. She's like, hi, I'm new here. What's going on?
No, that's and, true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that Tiffany, she is a... Yeah, I would say she's probably smartest of the group. She's like, well, hold on, let's wait about this. And she's like, I'm I'm not going in that basement. Like, she's like, yeah, I'm out of here.
Right, I think that's what I like about her is she's, on the surface, it seems like she's, you know, she's obviously the voice of reason a lot of times. But it's because she's cautious and because she's thinking about things and she's being more reticent than them and aware. And maybe it's because, and again, you know, like we're living in a time where, you know, your mom sent me pictures, you guys went to a Black Lives Matter march, which is awesome.
Yeah.
We're living in that time, it's 2020, where that's still happening. But obviously this book was written in the late 2010s and it's taking place in 1988 and all through time. And Tiffany's the only African-American character. And I find that, so there's a trope in science fiction and in horror movies that the black person gets killed first, right?
Yeah.
There's a joke about that even. I mean, it's like, it's a constant. And I think what I like about Tiffany, the reason that I kind of look at her as the smartest character, and I don't know if it's a commentary that Vaughn and Chang are doing, I think it is. There's that nod that Tiffany has to be more careful. Erin is Latinx. It's not the same because she's not the African-American character. Like, it's a commentary specifically, I think, on her being the more cautious and like, let's be careful and be more aware of your surroundings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of that. What do you think of that?
I would agree that she's kind of always on edge because, you know, at that time it was, you know, not the best. And she's always kind of like, well, let's hold on. Like, if there's, let's say, if there's like a monster coming out, she's like, well, let's just slow down and think about this. Because, like, if they made one mistake, they might all be eaten or whatever.
Right. Yeah. which almost happens on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah, I just think it's real smart. I mean, that's the one thing about it for a book about, you know, 12-year-olds, who the idea is. And again, this is why it was important for me to have you on here. How do you feel the four of them are portrayed? So KJ, part of the reason KJ is kind of reluctant, even though she should really be the leader because she's tall, she's strong, she's, you know, she plays field hockey, she's got literally a weapon in her hand. You know, she's pretty awesome. I like KJ, but because she's gay and she knows it, and she has a thing for Mac, it makes her a little more reluctant, which I find really interesting. Mm-hmm. That storyline plays out as the book goes on. But what did you think about, like, the authenticity or the way that the girls talk? I mean, again, this is written by adult men pretending to be 12-year-old girls. They were never 12-year-old girls. Not that you're a 12-year-old girl. I mean, you have a sister who's a little bit younger than you, but you've been around 12-year-old girls. So how accurate do you think it was? You know, how well do you think they did? Did you find it believable, or at any point in time you're like, no?
There was a little bit of, like, Mac introducing, like, Mac talking to Aaron, where it was kind of like, hey, new kid, here's blah, 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 blah. And it was kind of like, hey, how's it going? That'd kind of be the conversation, like, then kind of get to know you. Like, I mean, it wouldn't be this entire detailed conversation, but most of what they said was really accurate, I think. I have, you know, friends, and when we're talking, it's not really of anything in particular. We're like, so what did you think about that hot dog? I mean, it's just kind of stupid conversation.
Sure. But,
yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, I would say that a lot of it's believable, but not all of it.
That's fair. Well, and I think that's part of the issue with any kind of storytelling, but in particular with comic book storytelling, writers have to decide what you just said about Mac. That's right away, but it's like we don't know them. So
yeah,
Max really talking to us, like Aaron is our avatar, like we're
yeah.
At first, like, they all know each other and they're not necessarily super tight friends, because at the very end, one of the things that Tiffany keeps saying is, we're not just paper girls, we're friends. We're not just paper girls, we're friends. And because they become friends, but really at the beginning, they're just four paper girls who happen to know each other. None of them really, interestingly enough, none of them actually really have friends. Like Tiffany, because she's a gamer and she's an introvert. Mac, because she's a bully. KJ purposefully doesn't have friends, because even her own teammates she keeps at arm's length because of her sexual identity. And Aaron's new. So, you know, you're right. There's no way that when somebody new comes to your school, you don't sit that person down at lunch and go, listen, kid, I'm going to give you a 20-minute dialogue telling you everything. Take notes, right?
Yeah.
Do you think they could have handled that differently? Would having like a third person narrator kind of, you know, the words, not the word bubbles, but explain what's happening, would that have worked, do you think, a little bit better?
I think that even though it's not necessarily believable, they did a really good job of just explaining the entire thing to us. It was not that it was, I guess, incorrect or like it wasn't going to work, but I mean, it's kind of a thing where you have to I am not awake today.
That's fine.
I guess that they could have done a little bit better if they had done like a little bit of narrator dialogue, like just to explain things, like Mac can't really go into the fourth, like can't break the fourth wall, or, you know,
right, it's not Deadpool. Yeah.
And I think if we had a little bit of narrator in there, like just to like, and so then they're about to do this. And I mean, if they had added like a little bit more of a caption with like, you know, the date and place and time, like all that when they're teleporting all over the place.
Yeah.
Like you know, Stony Stream.
Yeah, and I think there's no perfect way to do it. It's because it's a standalone series, there's 30 mm-hmm. books, and in that first issue, this is our only chance to get to know them. So, right, you have mm-hmm. to choose, they have to make the choice, Vaughn and Chang. Do they do that? Do they do the narrator mm-hmm. where it's like, just here's us as mm-hmm. Vaughn and Chang telling you, or do you let one of the characters do it? And I think because Mac is sort of the leader by mm-hmm. default because she's a bully, it does kind of make sense that she's like giving Aaron a warning. But yeah, it's not the way a 12-year-old would probably talk. Now, Mac isn't your typical 12-year-old. She's way older than like she her life is hard. Mm-hmm. And so I think she's maybe grown up a little bit faster than the rest of them, mm-hmm. say.
Yeah, you know, with Mac's mom being an alcoholic and Mac smoking and, you know, all of, I don't remember if her dad, like, got poofed or just...
Know that you know.
Walked out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that you know. I think it's hinted at in different ways, I think. And that's what's interesting about Mac, too, is that, like you said, when we first meet her, mm-hmm. she's got all this information to imbibe on Aaron, but then she likes to play things close to her vest. She doesn't want everybody to know about her mom. She doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then later we find out that she's, when they travel through time, Mac finds out she's not going to live.
Yeah.
And so then that changes her whole perspective again. And so all that weight being put on a 12-year-old, knowing that she's going to die in the future from a very specific type of leukemia that only time travelers get. So it's like such a punch in the face because it's like you only have this because you travel through time, mm-hmm. And you only know about it because you travel through time, and you can only mm-hmm. see the world because you've traveled through time, but also now you have to be aware that you're going to die. And it was like such a, mm-hmm. That was a kick. That was hard for me as a reader because I really like Mac. I like mm-hmm. all four of them very much. That was real tough because, you know, then she starts to almost regress. Like she's, mm-hmm. Grown up, like she's 12 going on 30, and then when she finds out that bad news, she almost regresses back to like she's, you know, 9 or 10 mm-hmm. and throws fits and is just kind of a big jerk. Which I guess would happen, right? If you mm-hmm. found out, you would act that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite of the four?
I think Mac's my favorite.
Yeah. Why is that?
I think that through the entire thing, she's always been the leader, but she kind of gives a new perspective. Like, when KJ, like, kisses her, she's, like, wakes up to this, you know, new section of her life, and she's like, maybe I could do this, but also I have leukemia and I'm going to die, and just, she's complex.
Yeah, she really is. I think they do a great job with her, and again, you know, we'll be interested to hear what people say when we put this out. Other people have read Paper Girls. This obviously won a bunch of awards, so it's not like we're the only people who've ever read it. Before we get into the rest of the characters that we meet as we travel through time, one thing that I love about this is that it's set in 1988, and so they don't have. I mean, it's not. It's set in 2016, and what in the
2050 or
I mean they go, like you said, there's Stone Age, there's dinosaurs, there's dragons, it's a mess, mm-hmm. but it's there from 1988, and what I love about it is that because there are four 12-year-olds from 1988, they don't have any technology other than the walkie-talkies that and those only work part of the time, so they have, like, live by their wits a little bit.
Yeah.
And so as for you, somebody who's grown up, and you know, in the technology era, do you think, the question for you is, do you think, because you're 13, so if you and three of your friends were suddenly whisked through time without technology, how would you do? Do you think that you guys have the skill set that these four have, having grown up without it, or you have a different, better skill set that would enable you to survive in a way that they couldn't?
I think, like, when they went to older Aaron's house and they saw the TV, they were kind of like, what is that? Like, it, that's right. We'd kind of be a little bit more normalized to it. So we wouldn't be like, what is that? We'd kind of be like, oh, it's just a black box with an Apple sign on it. I mean,
right.
It's nothing mysterious.
Right.
Even though it's like quantum, like whatever, it's a space map basically.
Right. And yes.
I think that we would be a little bit less bewildered all the time because, you know, we see visual effects and we're like, oh, that's kind of, you know, we kind of see it every day in a way. Like when the huge, they live in our water, like a drop of water, the huge things that fight out in the hot, in the highway, like we wouldn't believe it, but we'd kind of be like, we wouldn't be like, what? Like, I mean, we would be that way, but
yeah,
it's still not like, what is that? Like,
you'd be, because you've seen, because really it's crazy to think about between 1988 and 2020, the technology, I mean, the fact that we're in different time zones in different states and we're talking in real time, we can see
it.
That's insane. Like, I've had people on this show from Belarus, from Australia, and we see each other and we talk in real time. And it's super cool. So technology is amazing that in 1988, if someone said, oh yeah, you could just get on your computer, which, you know, at the time there wasn't even the internet, and talk to someone. Like, when your mom went off to college, we wrote each other letters.
That yeah.
Because that's what people did then, you know, because we had to. And so we would only hear, you know, long distance cost money. So we couldn't just call each other. So it had to be like letters, and you wouldn't hear from each other for a month at a time, just because that's life. So it's fascinating to me. And I think you're right that for kids now to read it, you are... their life is almost like the life that the four of them have in 1988 is completely alien and foreign to you, where they come into 2016 and then into the 2000s, what is it, 2171. Again, even just coming from 2020 going into 2171, while of course technology would be super different, there's monsters and all this stuff, your brain can understand the advancement of technology, where in 1988, really, the difference between 1988 and 1968 isn't that vast. You know, it, like those 20 year difference is nothing compared to these last 20 years. You know,
I mean, what? you get dial phones, pay phones, like, you know, a Walkman.
I actually still have my Walkman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I see if I can find it here. Yeah. I keep it handy just in case. Yeah, here we go.
Nice.
Set. Cassette in it and everything. Yep. Yeah, no, you're right. And because Mac has one on her at all times.
Yeah, no.
And I get that because she doesn't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Like, keep this on. Yeah, no, I think that's true. I think that's right. I just was curious because again, I was them. You know, the cool thing about a time travel comic is that we are time traveling with them, but then depending on who we are when we're reading it, we're also transported to the era in which it's in. I mean, any good story will do that. Again, that's why Back to the Future works so well, because, you know, Marty's from 1985, so when he goes to 1955, we get to see that huge 30-year difference in the way that he talks. Like, in that movie, it's heavy, the language. Mm-hmm. He's always like, have you seen Back to the Future?
Yeah.
Okay. So when he keeps saying heavy, and the doc's like, what does weight have to do with that? Because it's different. So that's my next question for you, is the language. When they first experience and hear the language that's supposed to be in 2016, like the first time they meet with somebody, he's supposed to be from 2016, those first time travelers. But this was written in 2016, so they're not actually speaking a language that anyone really understands. Did you find as you moved on that the weird language barrier was easier to read, that by the time you got to the end of the book, you kind of could speak a little bit of the time traveler language? Or was it always, because when you really kind of thought about it, they were speaking some version of English.
Like, you could understand them. I mean, it wasn't, if you kind of looked at it and it was like, there would be like, I don't know, like when he, when one of the, when a person is talking to grandfather or whoever that person is, and he's like, can you please speak like my version of English? And
right.
Mm-hmm. And you can kind of tell it's English, but not necessarily. So it's, as you read the series, you can kind of get a little bit of it. You can kind of see how it looks.
Yeah. It's just fun to me because it's, they made a decision that in 2016, when they were writing it, they could have just used, like in 1984, they could have just used certain language or Back to the Future, where it's just like heavy, whatever. But they like made it a whole new different version of English. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a commentary on the technology difference when you start talking about things. Even you being 13, if you talk to someone who's older, me or your mother, mm-hmm. or you there's some words, there's some technology, there's some things that you know that we just don't get. Like, we don't know what the hell you're talking about. Isn't it like, mm-hmm. I don't know what that thing is. Like, this is true. For me, this is what reading this reminded me of. So that, using the hashtag, right?
Yeah.
When that first started, I didn't understand what it was because it's the number sign. So for me, my whole life, that's like, the hashtag is the number sign. That's what you would use that in place of the word number.
Yeah.
Or on a phone, it's called the pound symbol.
So yeah.
Everybody's like, hashtag this. And I'm like, and I remember sitting down with my kids who were probably a little older than you at the time, or you were like, okay, I really need you to explain this to me. Like, I was real honest about it because it made no sense to me. And so when I read this, because it's like, wait, that's just, you're saying hashtag is just the number sign? They're like, no, it's a hashtag. I'm like, but why? I'm like, because. I'm like, well, what does that mean when you hashtag something? They're like, well, you're drawing attention to it. I'm like, why not just put it in bold? And they're like, don't be dumb. So I was just wrong. So that was the thing that I always felt like in this, when we encounter the language from the perspective of the girls, it's like that, like trying to explain to them in 1988 what hashtag would have meant. They wouldn't have understood it. So I don't know. I thought it was fun. Was there anything that from their life, from their 1988 world, any of the things that they did that seemed foreign or completely weird to you?
I thought it was kind of a little weird that they were using crystal radios. Like, I mean, like, we don't really use that anymore.
Right.
And
that was big, super, that was of magic technology back then. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Tiffany was super proud of those.
Mm-hmm. $50 each.
Crazy. I know. And now you think you could go to like the store, like the Dollar General, and pay $15 and get a smartphone.
It's just
for real. Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
And if you just got a smartphone, like if you went and bought a $15 janky smartphone and had Wi-Fi, you could install WhatsApp on it and you could talk and text for nothing. And we're then $50 each. And then they end up not working all the time.
Yeah. And a thing that also my dad was talking about, TVs only had 3 or 4 channels back then. I was like, well, what do you mean only 3 or 4 channels? He's like, yeah, no, there was like cartoons in the morning, and then after a while you'd kind of get bored of it, and then news come on, and then you just kind of go outside and play. And it was the same thing with video games. Like, now video games are so good that we're just playing them all the time. And video games back then were kind of like, well, you'd play it for a while, and you go, kind of get tired of it.
Well, you beat it too. Like the games that Tim plays. Yeah, those are all beatable games. They all have ends. There's no, they're all flat screened. You're moving from right across the screen. Yeah, that's right. Well, your dad's what, from North Dakota, South Dakota?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for him, it's even, yeah, I mean, I'm surprised he even had 4 channels. Like where I'm from and where I met your mother in that part of Michigan, because we were close enough to Chicago. We had a few more channels because it was a big city enough, but with your dad, I'm, being out there, yeah, 3. Mm-hmm. We were lucky being from near Chicago. We had like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
There's a couple of bigger city channels. But yeah, oh, no, that's how it was. For sure. And that's why when they see the other technology, and all the TVs were big, they weighed 100 pounds. They were not easily moved around. Yeah.
And yeah. Another thing is the people used tapes back then. And I actually have a tape recorder in my room. I don't know where it is at the moment, but it's insane that you can take a piece of tape and put something on it, imprint it, and get sound from it. It's just, I mean, I don't know how to do that. And
yeah, it's antiquated technology, but it still is pretty cool. It's still amazing. Yeah. Yeah, my Walkman, you know, it has a record option on there. Not this one. That must have been, this one doesn't. This says stop, and this only has fast forward. There's not even rewind. Yeah. So
you'd have to flip the tape.
It over to back it up. Yep, that's correct. Yeah, pretty fascinating. Well, I walked around, and again, I mean, I had carried a Walkman most of my life. So all through high school, there's pictures of me just, I always had, like in Guardians of the Galaxy, those orange headphones. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. It is amazing. And I know tapes are making a comeback, like lots of current artists are putting out cassette tapes, which is insane. Okay, so let's talk about the rest of the characters a little bit as we, you know, and again, we're just kind of talking vague, getting an idea for what the comic is. I know we, with 30 issues, we can't, I don't want to like go, and then in episode two, so I want to talk through it. So essentially what we learn is that these four paper girls are going to save the world. That getting sucked through time has to happen. If they don't get sucked through time, time unravels actually. And at first we think they've broken it by getting in there, but then we eventually learn this has to happen. And they encounter older versions of themselves who help them. Like older Tiffany's life isn't super great. Older Aaron is in better shape, I think. And they travel back into what sometime way, like you said, here it is, 11706 BC.
Yeah.
And they meet you know, there's the genetic line that goes, right, Jaffo is the grandfather, and his he's related to them too, and there's this weird genetic line through the paper that kind of keeps time together. So what did you think of that? Was there a particular supporting character you liked better? Was there any supporting characters you didn't like as far as the old timers go, or any of the teenagers who are kind of working for the old timers, or even the older versions of the girls? What did you think? About? Is there any supporting characters you liked better? Did you think any of them were you were like, who's this now? You know.
I think one of the supporting characters that was nobody really liked was the lady from 1950, where she was, it Heck or Naldo, I don't know, but basically she hid in the basement while the old timers did their thing. And so basically she's like debated helping them, or like, and where she like tried to shoot them, like, I mean, like, why?
Right, yeah. This, her name is Charlotte I can't say her name, S-P-A-C-H-E-F-S-K-I. She's the cartoonist.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no.
She tries to kill Jude.
Yeah. She
tries to kill the girls.
Yeah. I get
why you don't like her.
Let's see, one of the supporting characters that I did like was I forgot her name. The one with the cool suit where it kind of was interdimensional, where like it was, hold on.
The doctor? Dr. Braustein.
Yeah, I think so.
She's pretty cool. Yeah, she's actually born in 2016. When we first, so like that's something that's cool. But she jumps around throughout time, and she's technically the woman who invents time travel. Right?
Yeah. And yeah, no. She's pretty cool, and then she got captured by the three not wise men.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, no, she was pretty cool. She helped out Mac in the end. She was like, it's the safeties on. And it's just like, common sense, Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny again, the thing mm-hmm. that girls don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the three? Because you mentioned two of them already. The third one is called Jude, the teenagers. Peck, Naldo, and Jude, they are teenagers in the distant future. What do you think of them? Did you find them too interchangeable? Is that why you couldn't figure out who was who? Do we need three of them?
I think, like, Jude helped... who is it? Aaron or Tiffany? Knows. KG.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that he was important. Heck and Naldo were also important because they saved Aaron's life. And
gets shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they also were controlling the weird robots and, you know, either got smushed or... whatever. I don't know. I remember seeing them in the black robes back in fourth one. But I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, the reason I asked is because I just feel like sometimes, and you're right, they all have important roles to play. They're really there. They're there to be what I think, this is my thought, in traditional storytelling up until this point, you know, in a lot of comic books, the girls, because these are girls, or the women, are the damsels in distress. For years, Lois Lane had no agency. She only existed so Clark could save her, right?
Yeah.
Mary Jane didn't have a lot of agency for a long time in Spider-Man. She only exists. I mean, they even killed Gwen.
Yeah.
In the comic and in the movie. Spoiler, everybody, Gwen Stacy dies. I mean,
she's
Gwen. There's other versions of her, but okay. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, women were female characters were only used to be kind of motivation. Mm-hmm. And there's the whole idea of fridging. Have you ever heard that term?
I don't think so.
So fridging is a term that's used where and it's because literally, like, I think this was a Green Lantern where they actually put, his love interest, she was in a refrigerator. Yeah, and it's like the idea is that the only way that you can motivate the hero to do good is to harm the woman that he loves, right? Or that the woman is only there to like act as inspiration or to be a helper. And in this case, these three guys, they save Aaron, they help, he helps hate KJ, they're the ones who encounter Charlotte. And, you know, so they're there to kind of run interference and to be helpers to the girls. So I find them interesting. To me, they blur a little. You're right, they're all important. But I think the representation of them, I almost wish that there were four of them, that it was like one for each of them. Like each girl kind of had her own teenager from the future to act as her her damsel in distress, as it were, to be the person who was there to help and nudge her along, but also to be the person who's acting in that passive role instead. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, sure, they save her life, but if they don't save her life, they're screwed too. So sure, they save Aaron, but they save Aaron so that she can go fight another day, as opposed to, careful, Aaron, you got shot, you're just gonna sit in a bed the rest of this book.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It's just me. That was my thought on the teenagers. I get why they're there. You're right. And I'm glad you brought that stuff up because it's true. They're really important to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the commentary there. So now let's talk about, we've kind of danced around it for a little while. Let's go right in and talk about Chang's art. Because you mentioned earlier how compelling it is to look at. So was there... what's your favorite stuff about it? And then the colors are amazing too. And I always think in a lot of my books, I end up talking about colorists, and it's Matt Wilson is the colorist for this.
Mm.
I think colorists matter, you know, they kind of set the mood and whatever. So What did you like about Cliff Chang's art style? Why was it compelling to you? Because it's not super detailed, like, and it's not, you know, have you ever read Spawn?
I've seen the animated movie.
Oh, okay.
I understand.
You get what I'm saying? Like, yeah, like, it's so detailed where, like, you can see every bead of sweat on his face. Well, you don't get that here. So what about it was appealing? Because he does leave a lot to the imagination. He does emote. You make them see their faces a lot. Like, they're angry. Like, Max always scowling. And when she's scared, you can tell. He does a good job there. But again, it's not graphic detail. So why did you like that kind of art style?
I guess instead of, like, throughout the entire thing, it wasn't, like, varying art styles. Like, in Deadpool, like, occasionally you get this artist, and then you get this artist to do that. And so having one type of art throughout the entire thing kind of helped it move the story along, but also keep things on track, because sometimes, like, it's just, like, in Deadpool, like, this is cool, but sometimes the story kind of mixes around because you don't really remember why this was there, who's there, like, but I think that, like, it's, even though it's simpler, it's, I guess, I don't know, it's a rememberable design, at least. I mean,
yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
But, like, there is a, not the most detail, but, like, throughout the thing, like, in this cover, like,
you can volume see, 6, yep.
Yeah, like, you can see the wrinkles on their face. I mean, it's not, like, you know, you can see everything, but it just, like you said, you kind of fill in with imagination of how you perceive the characters.
Yeah. What did you think about the way, because I, being from the, you know, being in 1988, I was in high school, so I feel like he did an accurate portrayal of how we dress. But obviously all the future stuff, he just got to make it up. Chang did. So what did you think about the way that he portrayed the way people dress and act in the future? Because the grandfather, he dresses like a beach bum from the 80s, you know, so he just wears like a t-shirt. But everybody else has these super fancy. What did you think about that? Or do you think that they were playing into what we think the future will look like, stereotype where it's got to be, you know, crazy stuff? Or does that, you're like, no, that's for sure what the future will look like.
I think the future will kind of be a little bit crazy. I mean, you can't predict everything. But what he did with it was pretty, I mean, if that was the future, it would look that way. I mean, like, who knows what it'll look like, but most of the clothing, like, it would be kind of mixed, like, you know, it might be, we might have a big drought and we might all wear, you know, tunics and robes,
yeah.
Like, or we might get a super huge flood and, you know, be foggy kind of swamp people, like, who knows?
We don't know, right? All those things are possible, sure.
But I like what they did at the fifth and sixth book, where as they were meeting their older selves, but also, like, as they were meeting, like, when Mac got diagnosed with the time travel cancer, like, I mean, it's the thing on his eye is probably for some reason. I mean, who knows? But
yeah, he does that. You're right. There's a lot of cool technology and characterization, not just on the people, but even on some of the critters and some of the monsters and stuff that aren't necessarily explained. They're just like, that's cool. And what I loved about rereading this in preparation for this is, yeah, there's so many subtle details that, again, it's not super realism. But like you said, what I love is you mentioned the wrinkles. Tiffany, the way that he draws Tiffany in particular, because Mac is frowny, and so she's already got lines on her face, and she's, you know, she and KJ both have red hair, but KJ doesn't have the
Yeah.
Freckles, but, you know, Mac's, like, angry, and she's got, like, the violently cut hair that looks like she did herself. And so there's lots of things, but their faces are smooth. They, you know, for the most part, they almost don't have chins. It's just kind of, like, round face. You know, they look like girls. And so then when you see them later, you're right, and there's, like, the notice of wrinkles, or when futuristic Tiffany has got, like, the kind of stuff under her eyes and the kind of almost tinfoil looking stuff in her hair.
Yeah.
But her face, you can tell it's her. You can tell it's older. And I think it's really a cool trick that Cliff Chang does. Is he's an artist. He could do whatever. Mm-hmm. But he really, because it's not photorealistic, but it still feels like time-lapse photography. Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. That was great to point out that it's the wrinkles in their faces, or the way that they stand a little bit, or just the difference in haircuts from as 12-year-olds to them as adults. It's subtle. And like you said, all this stuff that all the characters wearing, the doctor that you mentioned, her wardrobe is insane. But why does she look like that?
Mm-hmm.
They don't explain it. She just does. And you're like, because that's what time travelers look like. You know, or not, because they time travel. They don't wear a suit to time travel. They just, you know, they're in their 1988 clothes when they show up in the future. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, they don't need to be in a
suit or like
a... Yeah, there's no time travel safe equipment. I mean, the equipment itself, obviously, that traveling through time gives you cancer. So don't travel through time, everybody. That's what we learn. What do you think about the fact that there's not really a villain, necessarily?
I think that it's a little bit of a change from what we know about comics. Mostly it's like, well, Batman has to fight the Joker, or Superman has to fight Lex Luthor, or Spider-Man has to fight Venom. Like, it doesn't have to be that. The enemy or something like that could be, who knows, like, could be a corporation, but not like a single person. It could be a united group or a, I don't know, a message or a symbol. Like, in the end, there's not really a villain, but everyone has a side.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, right, there's not one evil overlord like, I'm going to ruin the paper girls. There's none of that. It's time itself is the villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course,
yeah.
these are 40-year-old men writing about being 12. So, of course, they feel like time is the villain a little bit. So, I think, but yeah, I kept... And they keep, they do a great job, Vaughn and Chang, a great job of making us think, oh, she's the villain. Oh, no, that's the bad guy. Oh, that monster must be bad. Oh, the monster's not necessarily bad.
Mm-hmm.
Monster's just doing monstery things because it's a monster. You know, like you mentioned, the cartoonist who, she's not great, but she's not really the villain either. She's just kind of complacent. And it's funny to me, too, because she's a baby boomer. And, you know, now there's the whole okay boomer thing. And it's, that wasn't necessarily a saying when they wrote this, but every time I see her, you know, like, oh, get out of there, lady. I don't know. She's willing to kill to keep the status quo, right? She's so desperate to keep things exactly the same that she wants to literally hide in a basement and pretend it's not happening. And if you're going to threaten her way of life, she will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she didn't make any of this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's just kind of there. She's doing her. She's not being evil. She's not like, aha, I tweaked their time machine. Like, she couldn't be there in that time. And
right.
She doesn't have access to a time machine. And I don't think she would be willing to, you know, screw up 4 girls' lives. I mean,
yeah.
She's just a person.
Right, who's she's portrayed as bad because she's super self-centered, which is problematic. But again, she didn't cause any of the damage. And so ultimately, the fact that there's no villain, like you said, at the end, everybody still has sides. And then it ends, sort of.
Yeah. their future selves. I don't know if it's killing them, or because when the invasion happened over in the city in the second book, it was like, do they get killed or do they get Alzheimer's? Like, I mean,
well, this is the question that I have for you. How does it? So it ends with them coming back to 1988 with their race. So does that mean then none of it happened, or did it all happen? And, you know, so is the comment, it's irrelevant? Like, everything they did, everything we spent 30 issues reading, doesn't matter. It's irrelevant because the four of them have forgotten, even though all these amazing things happened and they saved the universe. So that's just it. Do their older selves die and not exist now because they're sent back to 1988? Is it a total reboot and reset of the timeline? What was it all for? What are you left feeling when it's all over?
I thought, like you said, it was kind of a reboot. It wasn't necessarily like a huge, I don't know. It wasn't, for them, it wasn't like it wasn't all for nothing because they don't remember it. But I mean, they were tweaking with things they shouldn't have been tweaking with.
Of course.
You know.
Yeah.
I guess they were, I don't know, reset or just kind of like, here's the rules and guidelines. Try not to do this again. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the whole try not to do this again. Because, right, it's called with the Battle of the Ages, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this idea. And again, like I said, I mentioned that Charlotte's a boomer. And so they're Gen Xers. They're me and you're mm-hmm. Gen Xers. And, you know, you're Gen Z. And there's, you know, the other generation yeah. in there. And so essentially they're saying, like, at the end, they get a chance to do it over again and maybe try not to screw it up for the next generation, maybe,
mm-hmm.
or maybe try to accept the next generation has something valuable to say. There's this comment about them being, you know, they're 12-year-old girls. And so therefore, what kind of voices do they have? And yet they're given this giant epic responsibility throughout mm-hmm. these issues. And at the end, they're put back and they're 12-year-old paper girls again. And Tiffany has to decide if she's going to quit the paper route or not, which when the book begins, that was supposed to be her last day of the paper route. So, you know, that could still happen. And you know, as a kid yourself, so, you know, do you think like that concept of responsibility, like people expect things from you because, you know, you're not 6, mm-hmm. 13. So there's things expected of you. But are the expectations real? Do you feel like you have stuff to give to the world or to your family or to your school or to community, whatever, that is overlooked because of your age? Do you feel a responsibility being as young as you are? Can you think about 30 years from now, the next generation and what you're doing and how that affects them? Like, you know, I know it's a lot to ask, you're 13, but also I think those are the questions I feel that the comic is asking us, is like, they go through this epic battle. I will admit to you, I was really upset when this book ended. I read the final book while I was on a plane, and so there's nothing quite like watching a 40-something-year-old man cry while reading a book on a plane by himself. I was really I was sad at the ending. I was also, because it was over, mostly.
Yeah.
I also didn't want it to be futile for the girls. Like, was all this work they did for nothing? And then, you know, the further away you get from it, then you have these questions. So I know it's a million things, so I just would love to hear your thoughts on what the overall message is of the book and how do you relate to it?
I think it's, there's certain things that, you know, we can't control. I mean, I'm 13. I can't control the bills. I can't control the car or the house. I mean, at this point, I'm just a kid. And if I do what I need to do, and like, I don't know, if we follow our ideas, but don't necessarily step out of the box too far, I think just keep a balance between, like, you know, going to school and coming home and eating dinner, like, and then going to bed. Like, that's kind of boring, but, like, becoming a spy and infiltrating a, like, you know, a warehouse that's top secret, like, that's way out of the box. Like, if we can keep it just in the middle, you know, catastrophic things won't happen.
Right. Just come, but that's the question, though, because that's, like you said, that's what Charlotte does. She just lives. She kind of gets out of the way, literally goes to the basement. And, you know, her non-involvement almost caused, you know, some catastrophic things to happen, too. I think you're right, though. It's a tough, it's, there's no good, there's no right or wrong answer. So I appreciate your thoughts there. I just think that it's, to me, because I'm an Xer and the girls in this book are Xers and the people who wrote it are Xers. So it's a commentary to us. And for the kids who read it, depending on how old you are, you know, I think, you know, you're being 13 and having read it, and if you're 20 and read it, you'll read it probably differently. Every time you revisit this book, you'll get something different from it, not because you can't mentally grasp it now, but because you're just in a different place. And what the things mean. Like, so for me, what upset me the most was the memory wipe at the end. I felt really cheated on the behalf of the girls, especially KJ, because she goes through a lot of growth. Like, she comes out to them. She gets comfortable with that. She tells Mac how she feels about her. All that's gone. And it's like, oh, man, that sucks. Like, Erin's still going to be the new girl. Her day, when this is over, nothing really changes for her. Mac now doesn't know about the leukemia, so that's good. Tiffany's big thing is, should I quit the paper route or not? You know, so I felt just devastated for KJ and really for them all, because, you know, this was 30 episodes. This was over 2 years that this and so it was like a long journey of reading these books. And I didn't read them as floppies. I read them each, so every six issues, I'd read the trade, and then I'd have to wait six months and I'd read the trade. That's how I read it. Every six issues that came out in the trade, because it was almost, and that was still a painful long wait. Like, I have to, but it was, reading the monthlies was just, I didn't buy them, that way. And I don't really collect, I keep everything digitally now. So it was just, that's kind of how I did it, but it was still having to wait. And then when that third one, you know, when the final one came out, and it was, and honestly, every time I'd finish a volume, I'd be like, all right, I'm just going to start collecting the floppies, because I don't want to wait 6 months for the next one. But I managed to do it. It was just such a thing. So for me, it was a real long journey. I went through it in real time with them. I was real sad. But again, reflecting on it later, I'm really kind of happy for all of them. Still, except KJ. Yeah. And I think they've given us a lot to think about. I don't know. Do you know anybody else who's read this?
My sister read two or three volumes. She's reading them again, which I'm glad. And she's like, can I borrow those? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. She's a big reader, though, so she'll probably tear right through them.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I think she'll relate to it a lot, because, you know, she's in that age range, and, you know, she's got friends like that. I mean,
yeah.
not yeah. Mac, but, you know.
Well, maybe. We don't know. You don't know who her
friends are. Who knows?
What's happening in private. Yeah. I suspect 12-year-olds getting cigarettes in 2020 is a lot more difficult than in 1980. She gets them from her mother anyway, right? Her mother. So it's not like she goes into the store and buys them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just, so, yeah. That's not great. And nobody in your house is smoking, so it's not like there's any laying around anytime
soon. Nah.
That's cool. I'm glad Adele's reading them. Anybody else you know who's reading them? Or who has read them?
Nobody that I know of, sadly. I mean,
yeah.
It's really great series.
It is, but that's my last question always before we get into our wrap-up and everything, and you tell everybody, I hear you have a YouTube channel, and we'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
But, so my final question for everybody is always, who would you recommend this to? That's why I asked. So if there's either one person in particular or a type of person, who do you think should read this, or if you knew somebody, you're like, man, I really think you in particular, fill in the blank person, really dig Paper Girls and you would get a lot out of it, who would that be?
Probably my friends. I mean, they'd be reluctant at first. I mean, they haven't really read any comic books, but I mean, you know, it'd be a new experience for them in the way that they haven't really gone through an entire adventure for this, like, you know, it's 30. Yeah. 30.
It's 30. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, it's a journey. And once you go through it, you're like, huh, this is pretty great. And I think that they would like it because, you know, they're same age as me and I've read it and I really liked them. So, but also like anybody like my age or my sister's age, like, I mean, they'd probably love it.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, I definitely think there's some nostalgia there. You know, when your mom's finished with her thesis, I would love mm-hmm. to hear her thoughts on it. I know she reads, or she teaches that mythology class.
Yeah.
And while this is not quite like that, there is a mythology that's invented in this book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the concept of the way technology plays with mythology and everything. So I just think it would be, I would like to hear her thoughts on it, but also just again, because she would feel the, you know, the, mm-hmm. the buttons pushed to you from the way that they're done. I don't know anybody who's read this and was like, Paper Girls sucked. I've never heard that from any, but I think you're right. Some, and for you, you know, some of the boys that you're friends with, they might be reticent because there's this thing, well, it's Paper Girls. Mm-hmm. What I'm really excited, but you know, and I've not watched it. It's one of those gaps in my pop culture life is I've mm-hmm. not watched Stranger Things, but I see a comparison. Did you watch Stranger Things on Netflix?
It's really good. And
is there a lot of comparisons to this? I get that comparison a lot. I
see yeah.
writing. I have not watched Stranger Things. So do you think that's true? People who like Stranger Things would like Paper Girls?
I think so. Yeah. By the way, watch Stranger Things. It's like really, it's really good.
Yeah. I mean, I like Winona Ryder. I know she's in it and I hear it's fantastic. And I've been told by multiple people, you got to get to that. And it's just one of those things where it's like, not that I don't want to, but it's just, you know, you pick and choose what you watch. And
yeah,
the most exciting news, Jack, is that Amazon bought this. They're going to make Paper Girls into a series on Amazon. How exciting.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm excited.
Isn't that amazing? I'm way geeked about that. Yeah. That will be.
Oh, that's great.
I don't, you know, with the COVID lockdown, it may be a further, this is obviously going to push things out. Mm-hmm. Obviously if they're going to do it because of the time, they have to film it all at once. You know, they couldn't do it over 3 years because the girls, while the girls mm-hmm. age, air quotes, they don't, you know, so you can't, you have to keep them 12 because of the way that it ends. So they would have mm-hmm. to go in and film the whole run all at once, like over the course of a year. It'd be a mini series, obviously. It wouldn't be maybe they'd make like 10 or 20 episodes and then put it out, you know, because there's 30 issues of this. I don't know that there's 30 TV shows, maybe 30 half hour TV shows, mm-hmm. but I don't really make 30 hour long shows mm-hmm. of it without adding too much. But yeah, isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think that would be, I mean, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's too late. The girl who played Laura in Logan, who now plays Lyra on the on His Dark Materials, she would have been an excellent, if they were filming it now, she would be a great Erin. But by the time mm-hmm. around to it, she'd be too old. You know, she'd be 15 or 16. And I think you actually have to hire 11, 12-year-old girls to do this, right? Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, no, the same way they did Harry Potter, I mean, you'd have to hire that age group of kids.
Yeah, and then hurry up. Yeah, because they filmed those first four Harry Potter movies right away. And then after that, because once you're 19 or 20, we can do the makeup. We can make a 22-year-old look 17, but you can't make a, you know, you can't make a 17-year-old look 12.
Yeah. They're too tall. And...
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, especially that kid who played Neville, that actor, he ended up becoming like 17 feet tall. So, cool. Well, thank you for coming on. I know we didn't, I mean, look, there's no way to cover it all. I just love having a conversation and, you know, The show I just did yesterday was a big cast of characters too. It's called Black Hammer from Dark Horse. Have you read that? It's like alternate superheroes. Where we did the same thing where we really just kind of spent most of the time talking about the characters because they were so cool. And that, you know, I know that's kind of all we did here, but hopefully we've intrigued people enough. I know we did give away the ending, but I'll record the beginning when I do the intro and I'll say, here's the warning. So you've
spoiler alert.
Yeah. So I hear you have a YouTube channel that I would like you to plug here before we end.
My YouTube channel is Clover Hill. I am still getting out content, so please check it out.
Clover Hill, one word?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just, if I go to YouTube and type in Clover Hill, I'll find it.
Maybe.
If not, you'll send it to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Send me the link. All right.
Well,
what do you do on there?
We're gonna do a series called Adulting, where basically I'm going through, like, how do you cook ramen, how do you cook a meal, like, you know, or how do you change your tire, like, basically preparing me for the outside world, so I don't
nice.
Yeah no
That's cool. And I've heard I've talked to your mother. She's gonna be on it, and Brian's gonna be on it.
Yeah.
Dad and stepmom gonna be on it too.
Maybe.
Have you hit them up yet? Okay, well, that's cool. I mean, it'll be fun to watch because people, so Jack's stepdad, Brian, is 7,000 feet tall. So
yes, that's true.
What I've heard is he's going to teach you how to mow the lawn. So I would love to see him try to set up the lawnmower for him at 17 feet tall. And then you have to take over at 17 foot tall setting. So I'm excited to watch that just to see how that's.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It'll be a fun experience.
Cool. No, it's going to be, that's such a cool idea. And, you know, I think it's appropriate too that you're on the show talking about Paper Girls because, you know, they're that same age as you where they're trying to figure out, and they obviously spend this whole book on their own trying to figure things out on their own. And so I think the idea that you're saying, hey, I'm going to help people figure stuff out because, again, sure, Google's cool. But you making YouTube videos, it's not just, it's you being taught how to do it. So there's step-by-step directions and this is what you do. I think that's a great idea. So I will link to it in the show notes and people will click on it and they'll be like watching Jack Clover Hill at YouTube, something or other. You'll send me the link and I'll put it in there.
All right.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, it was wonderful to talk to you.
So I want to thank Jack for spending time with me today and thank everybody for listening to this episode of Indie Comic Spotlight. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Tricycle Boombox, or you can go to my website, arfarina.com. You can send me emails there. Check out all the stuff that I'm doing. Check out what everybody else in the Comics in Motion podcast is doing. Please, please, please like us, subscribe us, give us a rating. That really helps us get out there and grow. I really appreciate